still. Verse 6. Still. You know, if you really believe in the plenary inspiration of the Word of God, meaning you believe that every word is inspired and that God put it in there for a reason, it's okay to do a Bible study word by word. Now, I've promised you we're not going to go through the entire book of 2 Peter word by word, but we will finish this list by God's grace, really to help us to see how important it is to have these character qualities in our life. You know, there are some in our culture, or even in churches today, that start well. They start their Christian life well. They immediately, God does an amazing work in their life, and it seems like sanctification in their life is almost instantaneous. And they take some huge, huge strides. And praise the Lord for that. Not everyone's like that. Some people get saved, and they just continue to grow. They're more, as Adoniram Judson said he was just a plotter. And I think a lot of people are like that. And both of those are fine as long as when you get to the end of your Christian life and the Lord is ready to take you home, that you finish well. And some people can start well, but they may not finish well. And tonight, we're going to talk about a key character quality that is going to help you to finish well in this Christian life. Peter knew that in addition to a resolve to pursue God's purpose in your life, that which we've called virtue here in 2 Peter chapter 1, that was in verse 5, they would need knowledge, the knowledge of Christ, His work, His purpose, His working in your life personally. All those things together give us not only a knowledge of Christ, but also an intimate knowledge and relationship with Him, which really is the result in verse 8 of this chapter. Not only do we need that knowledge, but you're going to need that spirit control, that temperance found in this list, to keep the internal desires from sidetracking you from fulfilling God's purpose in your life. And so as we said so many times before, but I heard recently, maybe I mentioned this before, but in order for somebody to really start grasping something, sometimes they have to hear it up to 21 times. 21 times. I don't know that we'll be in 1 Peter chapter 1 for 21 more weeks, all right? Not promising we won't be either. But it's all right to rehearse what we've learned, and hopefully we'll continue to lay that foundation so that as we move on through the rest of the book, we can look back and not have to rehearse every word, but we'll get this idea of this sanctification. But remember, all these things are happening simultaneously, yet they are still built one upon the other. And so if we're going to incorporate these things into our life, you're going to see very soon that the next thing is patience, this idea of patience. Now, we'll talk more about that word. I want to start off with an illustration about a man I just heard about this week. Never heard of him before, but I found out that Hollywood's going to distort a movie about him. And, I don't know that for sure, but I don't know any other movie that they haven't. So I'm just kind of going on their past performance. A fellow by the name of Louis Zamperini. I'm just going to go ahead and ask you, anybody ever hear that name before? All right, several of you. Several of you. An amazing, amazing story. We're going to tell just a little bit about it, about his life tonight in a way of an opening illustration. He was born on January 26 in 1917 in Olean, New York. With an older brother and two younger sisters, his family moved to Torrance, California in 1919, where he eventually finished high school. Now, Lewis was especially good at causing trouble. As a matter of fact, his brother said that if the police were going south in Torrance, Lewis was heading north, most likely to get out of their way and to get away from whatever he'd done in the south where they were going to check. And so everyone around him, his family and neighbors and even friends, knew that really he was heading in the wrong direction. They were trying to channel his negative behaviors into some kind of positive direction. And his older brother Pete finally got him involved in sports, and most specifically running. And boy, it wasn't long before people there found out that Louis Zamperini could flat out run. In 1934, as a matter of fact, he set a world interscholastic record for the mile at 4 minutes 21.2 seconds. And that was at the preliminary just to meet at the state championship. He went on to win a scholarship to the University of Southern California. By the way, that record stood for another 20 years after that. He eventually placed on the 1936 U.S. Olympic team in the 5,000 meters at the ripe old age of 19. The youngest U.S. qualifier in that event. Although he finished eighth in the 5,000 meter Olympic race in Berlin, his final lap of 56 seconds was fast enough to get a personal greeting from the Führer himself, Adolf Hitler. 2 years later, he set a national collegiate mile record, which held for 15 years, earning him the nickname the Torrance Tornado. He said that when he was getting onto the train, somebody had painted that on the outside of his suitcase, and he looked around and found some adhesive tape, probably some kind of duct tape to cover it up. He was so embarrassed that all the world-class athletes, he didn't want to think that he was something that he wasn't. And so he was just embarrassed about that, but that shows you a little bit about the humility of this man. However, his hopes for winning a gold medal, you see, he didn't fare that well. He got in eighth place. Of course, he finished that last round in less than a minute, which was incredible. But his hopes of competing in the next Olympics in Tokyo went awry because of the war. And so when his country needed him most, he joined the Army or Air Force. I don't remember which one it was. It was the Army. In my notes, I put the U.S. Army Air Force, so I'm not sure what that means. But I do know this. He was a bombardier. He was deployed to the Pacific Island as a bombardier on a B-24. And during a search and rescue, they were given a plane that had supposedly met this all the qualifications of a plane that they need to go out. But they found out later that plane was used piecemeal to help other planes run. And so they went up looking for this other B-24 that had gone down, and they were trying to save these people's lives when two of the engines quit working. He said, listen, the thing was barely able to fly with four engines running. There's no way they're going to keep it in the air with only two. And so it went screaming down into the ocean. Not enemy fire, nothing like that, but he was still strapped inside when it hit the water. He said he could barely get himself out of that plane, and he was just able to get away from it when it exploded. And so of the 11 or 12 guys that were inside, three of them made it alive. They were about 800 miles west of Hawaii, which means really they're about in the middle of the ocean. Somehow, some way, there was a life raft that had been deployed from that airplane. And it was floating away from them, and so Zamperini swam over to grab the life raft. And he climbed inside, and he went over and picked up the other two guys, the pilot and the rear gunner, that had also survived that crash. They had six candy bars and six quarts of water to keep them sustained. But according to Louis Zamperini, he said after that first night, the tail gunner panicked. He was panicking, and he ate all six candy bars. So they guarded the water fiercely after that. And they would take one sip every morning and one sip every night. And so went their first week in the middle of the ocean, floating, hoping that they would see some kind of airplane. And I believe after a week they didn't see anything. Maybe after 2 weeks they did see an airplane. I don't remember the exact timing on this, but they stood up, they shot something into the air, and the airplane never saw them. He had such great excitement after being out on the water for that long. Now understand, their water supply diminished. They didn't have any food at all, and so they had to catch fish with their hands, or they would say sharks. They were always under the threat of some kind of shark attack. He said that one time, the very first encounter they had with a shark, they saw the dorsal fin come up, just like a bad movie, and just circle that thing, circle their raft for about 2 days. It would go back underneath and bump up the bottom of the raft, and they would just say, don't talk, don't move, don't do anything, while this thing was there. And so finally after 2 days that went away, but they would catch these small sharks and eat the liver of the shark. I don't know if they ate anything else. He said one time they caught an albatross, and it tasted like an ice cream sundae. That's how hungry they were. He's always hoping that somebody would find them. Drifting in the middle of the ocean, day after day, hour after hour, in the exposure. Pretty soon, two weeks turned into three. They went almost 7 days, or at least 7 days, without rain one time. Now, rainwater was the only way that they would get any kind of drinking water. Near death from exposure, they were able to get some water that night, and the next morning the waves are still tumultuous, and at the very top of the wave they looked out and they saw land. They had been on the water for 47 days. They had traveled 2,000 miles on the water, and yet they were still able to be alive. They crawled up to the beach, they crawled out. They didn't even have enough strength, but they had landed on the Marshall Islands. And we'll talk more about him towards the end of our message. But I want you to get this idea of a person. Just think of two soldiers. Well, I didn't tell you this. On day 33, the rear gunner, the man that had ate the six candy bars, did not make it. He died. And they had a little service for him and put him over the side of the raft. That's how serious the conditions were. They thought every day would be their last day. But I'll tell you this, they never gave up. And they made it all the way to the Marshall Islands, not nearly the end of the story, but the end of the introduction. But I do want you to think about these two soldiers surviving an epic 40 days in a raft out in the Pacific Ocean, battling food and water shortages, constant shark attacks, and even multiple strafings by a Japanese bomber. I knew I was going to forget something else in the story. Long about 3 weeks into it, they heard another airplane going by, and they used a mirror and got this guy's attention, and the next thing they heard was machine gun fire. And so Zamperini jumped into the water. The other two guys they didn't have enough energy even to jump out. And their raft was riddled with holes from this Japanese bomber that was strafing them for 45 minutes. He says it was an absolute miracle that the two men in the boat never got hit with a bullet. It took them 3 days to pump out all the water and to fix all the holes before they were able to continue on their journey. But it's just one thing after another that happened to these guys on their 2,000-mile journey. I read somewhere else that is a world record for a trip in a life raft, all right? So I don't know about you, but I don't plan on breaking that. I don't think they did either, though. That's a scary thing. But as we look at our text, we see that the next character quality in this list is called patience. But I'll be really referring to it tonight as patient endurance, because that's really the idea that this word has. The word Peter uses for patience is the Greek word hoponome. And it's a compound word, which really means to remain under. It's translated in other verses as enduring or patient continuance and even patient waiting. And so carries with it the idea of endurance or even perseverance. Not giving up, simply not giving in. You know, I think of Louis Zamperini out in that life trap, hoping for rain, slowly starving to death, persevering through those hardships, enduring the difficulties that he faced for those 47 days. And I think sometimes about the things that I have to endure. Like the air conditioning that goes out of my truck once in a while. That's awful, right? Or we run out of the kind of milk I like and only the kids' milk is left. That's awful. I don't want to drink that stuff. Or maybe even somebody gives me a menacing glance when I hand them a track. Really? Is that something I have to endure? That's how we act sometimes. And I want to contrast the kind of the idea of what Peter gives us this word for, what God has given us this word for, and maybe that we re-examine our own circumstances. And so while patience is an excellent way to translate this word, it kind of carries with it a passivity that's not found in this word. When we think of having patience, we just think of just taking it and taking it. But that's not really the idea or the connotation that this word has. Barclay calls this one of the most noble of New Testament words. Because of its link with courage, he calls it the manly virtue. Plato believed that it is brave resistance that is honorable to man, and another author stated that it refers to a courage and steadfast endurance in the face of suffering evil. So the word translated patience in this passage looks to the future. To get us through whatever heartache we may be experiencing now. You know, the difference between our Christian life and that which Louis Zamperini went through, he had no idea if he was ever going to get saved. He had no idea if he was ever going to get to the island. But I'm telling you, we have the promises of God that give us what we need for what? Godliness and perfection, right? That's what he talks about in the beginning of the chapter. Look back with me in verse 3. According to his divine power, hath given unto us all things that pertain unto life and godliness through the knowledge of him that hath called us unto his glory and virtue. Verse 4, whereby are given unto us exceeding and great and precious, what? Promises. Boy, that is what Peter is saying through the inspiration of the Holy Ghost. He is telling us that while you may be going through some difficult times, and can I kind of just remind you for a second the kind of difficult times that Peter and his crowd was going through? It was very, very difficult times. It was the times when Christianity was being persecuted and they were dispersed, not because they wanted to go out into the world, but because they wanted to get away from that persecution. And so for Peter to say, listen, I am giving you this character quality, or the Lord is giving us this character quality that we can instill into our life so that because of the promises that we're given, we are able to get through the difficult times that we are going through today. Think about that. Although endurance means to be constant under external pressures, it doesn't mean merely controlling our temper or gritting our teeth or just waiting out the storm. Or as one guy said, tying the knot at the end of your rope and holding on when you get there. Jim Burke said this, in the scriptures, the ethical principle at stake was maintaining a response that glorified God no matter what the external pressures. Boy, that one phrase right there, I'll tell you, I just had to meditate on that a little bit. Because can't we have a good testimony when everything's going well? That's a lot easier. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of things that can derail everything going very well in a very quick time, a very short amount of time. Pressures like family, or friends, the affliction from disease or some sort of bodily function begins to fail. Boy, your whole world can be turned upside down in a millisecond. But what's your response going to be? It could be a physical torture, poverty, or I believe one of the things that leads to more dissension in churches and families and marriages than anything else. Failed expectations. But the man that has endurance, this patient endurance, would do nothing that dishonored God no matter how strong or how forceful the external force coming at them. Now that preaches, that's good preaching. That just preaches good. But I'll tell you the truth. I've worked secular work. And I've been in school and tried to work at the same time. And I can tell you, when you are physically run down and you are tired, the way you react to things that way so many times are different than what you would even want it to be. But do you remember what the formula is? As we are coming alongside of God and doing our best, God is then helping us to grow in these areas. That's the formula. And what happens sometimes is, you know, we think, I've just had enough. I can't take anymore. And the truth of the matter is you probably cannot. But what we need to learn to do is then start shoveling off of our shoulders and giving it back to the Lord. So I knew I was going to mess this word up. I really don't even speak Greek, but it is a word. Hupomone is that ability to remain faithful to God under pressure because your heart looks continually to God in faith for strength and reward. Remember, adding to your faith, hupomone. This is cultivating a God-sustained faithfulness under external pressure. Hebrews 11 lists several saints that persevered under this kind of trial. Verse 35 says, women received their dead, raised to life again, but then it starts, and others were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. And others had a trial of cruel mockings and scourgings. Yea, moreover, of bonds and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn asunder, were tempted, were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. Wow. You ever really think about what they went through? And I'm worried somebody's going to give me a cross look. Now, the truth of the matter is it really shouldn't matter if it's something that severe or if it's something that we kind of laugh or joke about today, because if we're ever put in that position, we should still have that patience that is referred to in this passage. But I think it's very easy right now to contrast what we go through on a daily basis compared to what saints of the past have had to endure. But keep in mind, no matter what God has for you, or what He allows, I should say, to come into your life, we are just to display that endurance, that patient endurance in our Christian life. So no matter what the external pressures are, we can still glorify God for the situation we find ourselves in. History is replete with examples. You know, much like I gave earlier about Louis Zamperini. But there is one historical and biblical figure that perfectly displayed this patience. Hebrews 12:2 says, looking unto Jesus. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross. That word endured there, hupomone, is the same word translated in our passage in 2 Peter as patience. He endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. And so there is an active component in this word. One lexicon states, there predominates in this word the concept of the courageous endurance which manfully defies evil. And so it includes an active and energetic resistance to hostile power. You know, Bob Jones had some pithy chapel sayings that sums up this idea of patient endurance. He said, do not ask God to give you a light burden. Ask Him to give you strong shoulders to carry a heavy burden. I thought that was pretty good. And he said, the test of your character is what it takes to stop you. Think about that. What is it that stops you from displaying a Christ-like attitude? Is it dealing with somebody that is short with you? Is somebody cut you off while you're driving, or they're going 5 miles under the speed limit? I better not go there. I'm preaching at myself here, all right? But what is it that steals your testimony from others, in the eyes of others? When you get married, there will be no one that can light your fuse quicker than your spouse. But what are you doing to try to work on that endurance, that right response? Are you incorporating this patience? When someone offends me, when I am inconvenienced, or sometimes am I derailed because of discouragement or frustration, or how about this, anonymity? When I'm able to be anonymous, do I have another testimony? Am I known by a screen name of people that would have no idea that I'm a Christian? When consequences are not favorable, is that enough for me to try to weasel out of the consequences somehow, to lie, to do something that would be, again, against Christ-like character? What about when I'm not recognized for what I do? Well, I might as well not do it at all anymore. So there's a lot of different things. What about when life isn't following your blueprint? And again, there's frustration or something like that. Every one of these character qualities are only as good or strong as its ability to hold up under pressure. Did you ever think about that? So those qualities that precede it are the fuel that propels this patient endurance. Developing endurance begins when we agree with God that our purpose on earth is to become Christ-like and fulfill the purpose for which He's designed us. That's virtue. As we study Christ, His person and works and teaching, we add to that knowledge, and then we must battle our own sinful impulses in order to respond as Christ would from the trials that we experience, sometimes daily, sometimes hourly. And I'll just be honest with you, isn't there times where you feel like you're just battling by the minute and trying to get out of some kind of temptation or some kind of attack that you're in? It happens. It happens. And we will be tempted to indulge ourselves in physically immoral ways. We will be tempted to protect or promote ourselves through dishonesty or pander to our laziness by time-wasting activities. There's a lot of things that could help derail our testimony or feed our covetousness or express our contempt for someone or complain about our circumstances or be tempted to waste our money or neglect our time with God. And the only way that we'll overcome is to continually cultivate these qualities. Listen, it's not just a one-time event where you get a victory, you get an award, and you go home and you put it on the shelf and you can say, look, I got victory in that area of my life, and I don't have to worry about it anymore. That's not how it works. And every time you find yourself being tempted in one of these ways, it's kind of like beginning the race all over again, and you've got to make the right choices, and you've got to trust God, and you've got to do these things that we've been talking about for the last several weeks. So the kind of joyful, hope-filled, courageous, patient endurance does not show up from nowhere. It doesn't just break on the scene unexpectedly at the crucial time of need. It is forged, Jim Berg says, on the anvil of years of daily commitment to Jesus, followed by countless daily surrenders to Him as each new challenge and temptation arise that day. I'm going to read that quote one more time. This endurance is forged on the anvil of years of daily commitment to Jesus Christ, followed by countless daily surrenders to Him as each new challenge and temptation arises that day. James said it this way, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh hupomone, patience, patient endurance. This hupomone, or steadfastness, is, as the other qualities, grounded in the promises of God. We mentioned that earlier. And if you're going to get through the temptation, I want to let you know you can receive strength from the promises of deliverance or blessings of obedience. It is these promises that help us to get through the difficult times and should help us to exercise that spirit control, that temperance that God wants us to have. When the struggle seems more than you can bear, add to your virtue patient endurance. Knowing that God is going to help you. Knowing that He's not going to give you more than you can bear because He's promised that. I began tonight by telling you of Louis Zamperini and his incredible survival at sea for 47 days. But I want to tell you that is not even nearly the rest of the story. You remember that Zamperini and his friend Russell Allen, or Phil Phillips, made it to the Marshall Islands. But what I didn't tell you was that it was controlled by the Japanese. He was immediately captured by the Japanese Navy, and it was not long before both Zamperini and Phillips wished their struggles were only food and water and sharks. And for over the next 3 years, these two men joined other World War II prisoners of war in some of the most horrifying treatments which could ever be inflicted on human beings by other human beings. The mental and physical treatment that they endured could not begin to be described in this short message, but I do want to let you know he did persevere. Zamperini was held in the Japanese prison of war camp in Ofuna for captives who were not even registered as prisoners of war. His family thought he was dead, missing in action. He was especially tormented by a sadistic prison guard named Mutashiro Watanabe, whom the prisoners had nicknamed the Bird. Now, the Bird knew of Zamperini's Olympic fame. And really, that seemed to make him all that much more intent on breaking this well-known athlete. Later on, Douglas MacArthur, the general, would eventually include the Bird on his list of 40 most wanted war criminals in Japan. And the Bird was finally transferred to another prison after dispensing to Zamperini unfathomable pain. Can you imagine how grateful Zamperini must have been finding out that his tormentor had been transferred? It was that very same week that he was moved from the labor camp where he was at and was relocated to the very same prison camp that the Bird had been moved to. He said it was the very lowest point of his entire life. And so the Bird resumed his incredibly inhumane treatment to this young soldier. But as the war ended, Zamperini and Philip, along with many American POWs, were rescued and able to return home. For Zamperini's family, they had heard he was first declared missing at sea and then a year and a day after his disappearance, killed in action. When he eventually returned home, he received a hero's welcome. But I'm excited to tell you that's not the end of the story either. After the war, Zamperini suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder. He had nightmares every night, of course, involving the horrific experiences that he went through. He said he woke up every night in his mind with his hands around the throat of the Bird. He said, "I didn't want anything else but vengeance." He said, "If I ever made enough money, my only goal was to go back to Japan and find this man and kill him." But he began to drown his misery with alcohol, and his life and marriage were in a desperate and destructive tailspin. But just as he was about to cross that point of no return, his wife Cynthia, to whom he remained married for 55 years, persuaded him to attend the Billy Graham Crusade in Los Angeles, where he trusted Christ and became a born-again Christian. That night, he slept through the night without one nightmare, and he testified that they never returned after that. Perhaps the most amazing part of Zamperini's story took place in October 1950 when he returned to Japan. While there, he visited a prison which held many of the war criminals who had committed the worst atrocities at the prison where Zamperini had been held. And so those that had been his captors were now in captivity. As he shared his story, his testimony of how Christ had changed his life, many of his former guards came forward to meet him. And to their amazement, he threw his arms around them with genuine affection and forgiveness. Now, years later, he tried to do the same thing with the Bird, but his former tormentor refused to meet with him, probably under great conviction for the way he treated people. I don't know. But I do know that that is an excellent picture of the patient endurance, no matter what the outside forces might be, that we're not going to break, not because of our own strength, not because we are super Christians or superhuman, but because of the power of God in our lives, because of the promises of God in our lives, we can know that we can get through the difficulties that God allows into our life with the patient endurance that we're trying to add to our life, and He is helping to grow in our life. It's so very exciting to see how each one of these feeds off of the other. You just can't have patient endurance without the virtue or the temperance. And you can't pull any one of these out and just perfect that one and start working on the next one. The truth of the matter is they're all growing, but maybe one's growing more at this time. So then you can start focusing on the next one, but they all have to be working in conjunction with the other one. And so I encourage you, if you're going through a difficult time, if you are struggling in some area of your life and you're just wondering if you're ever going to get through this thing, I want you to know you can trust the promises of God, and He's not going to give you more than you can bear. And because of the patient endurance that He wants you to have in your life, you can get through it. And not only that, you can get through it with a good testimony, glorifying Him, whether it's pleasant in our sight or not. And that is a promise that we have, found in this passage of Scripture, patience, or a patient endurance. And I hope today that if you are going through a difficult time, that you will reflect on that thought tonight and thank God for the promise that He's given us in patient endurance. All right. Let's go ahead and look at our